Hello and welcome to Columboys, the podcast all about the secluded, quarantined, socially distancing world of Lieutenant Columbo. From a sealed chamber in a bunker 50 miles below Chicago, I'm Mac, and joining me from the last ship of uninfected, currently sailing in international waters, it's Ben. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Mac.
So, it's worth noting up front that this is, I think, the closest to an episode airing that we've ever recorded a podcast.
There were
a lot of things that happened. I had a family in town. You went on the Joko cruise, right?
Yes, that's true.
So we both were very busy, and we had this buffer, and it's slowly been getting worn down as the weeks have gone by, as just more things happened. So we were recording this. We are both quarantined in our various cities. I'm in Chicago, in lockdown. Seattle is also.
Weirdly, I think your city is now in harder lockdown than ours.
I know. Well, I thought that they just announced like a curfew there or something. Like you can't, if you're out and you have a symptom, they will cite you.
Maybe that's here.
That might be here.
I think that's either you or that's New York City, because New York City's density is pretty extreme right now. And obviously, I mean, always.
We're recording this on Friday, so when it airs on Sunday and everything is completely different, you know, it's not our fault. Things are just happening so fucking quickly right now. Jesus fucking Christ.
I mean, here's what
will
be different.
Stay safe out there, folks.
Yeah, there will be more infections, and we will all be nervous about that fact, and there won't be enough tests.
But we're here to keep it. We're keeping it light.
Definitely keeping it light. Woohoo! We're here to talk to you about dentistry.
But there might be a little more. Ben still got his nice professional setup, but I am recording from my Yeti at home. There may be some background child noise, but we'll do the best we can. Unprofessional things happening in our podcast. This is literally the first time this has ever happened.
Yeah, we've never had before. Background noise on this never podcast before. From my end.
I'm sure there's a lot less traffic on that road right now.
That's true.
Anyway, this week we're looking at season 9, episode 4, Uneasy Lies the Crown. This episode stars James Reed as a dentist who murders his wife lover in a complicated revenge plot / twisted psychodrama. Reed appeared as Murphy Michaels on Remington Steele.
Aha.
And most recently had a recurring role on General Hospital. Is that where you knew him from?
I was trying to peg it, because honestly, the first time that he made an attempt at acting, I was like, what is going on here? and then I just assumed that he was from like soaps.
Yeah, I mean, he is now, yeah.
Yeah.
This episode also stars Marshall Teague as the victim. Teague's been a working actor in Hollywood since the early 80s, but he's best remembered as Billy, the guy who definitely has a throat, no spoilers, in the Sam Elliott film Roadhouse. This episode also features an uncredited cameo from Columbo regular John Finnegan, playing a chili-serving waiter. This is Finnegan's 8th appearance on Columbo, and folks, he will be back.
Waiter. He's not Red, is he?
He's not Red. No. He's the guy who has the tiny time pills.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, which is a pretty important thing, and it's weird that he's not credited. So
yeah,
I don't know what
very
that's
weird. Like, he's literally part of a
he's
key,
like the whole
like,
plot kind of
point,
hinges on
exposition. Yeah.
A little bit. It's weird. But yeah, so that is what's going on in this episode. Yeah, so certainly one of the more complicated murders, I would say.
Yeah, I feel like anytime you're gonna do a murder and doing that murder that involves a cover up that is also a fake, and like it's so convoluted,
right?
You're bad, dude. You're bad at this.
That has been the sort of running theme of 80s/90s Columbo, is the fake cover up, right?
Yeah,
like that's just kind of been the most common thing, is people executing this fake trail to throw Columbo off the trail.
it's this weird like double bluff thing where they're like, ah, I know what I'll do. I'll lazily plant this other evidence, and he totally won't see through that at all or notice how none of that shit adds up with any of the other evidence from the crime.
Right.
Like it's, yeah, I mean, you know, it's, but it is, you're right in that like they're trying to complicate the formula and find something that keeps it fresh. And
yeah, they're just trying to do something new,
and sometimes I mean, it works.
This episode definitely succeeds at doing something that other episodes haven't done. is it good?
No.
No, not really.
It's not.
It's okay at parts. There are a couple good Columbo moments. There are a couple weird. We'll get to it. There's a couple inexplicable sequences.
Oh, listen, there's more than one for sure. And then there's an awful lot of like small ancillary like comic relief moments.
Yes, and absolutely.
And they're not all bad because they're not like, hey, we just picked one and we're gonna make it huge. Instead, right. They're just like little things. Although some of them get a little weird, like. Like the one where he runs into the cop at the vending machines in the station, and the cop is like, I read this in the newspaper about this case, and Columbo's like, what? Who fucking leaked that? And then the guy was like, so why haven't you arrested anybody? It's like, wait, you're a fucking cop, and you're taking your cues from like a newspaper article? What is going on? You know, I mean, again,
there's like the weird thing where the coffee maker starts filling up with coffee like it's a cartoon.
It's like it's a cartoon or it's like a fucking vending machine from Hitchhiker's Guide. Like either way, it's really weirdly out of place. That and then like the awkward ADR of him whistling this old man.
My favorite moment of awkward ADR is from Lydia Corman, the wife of Dr. Wesley Corman, who is the murderer. Mm-hmm. There's a moment where Columbo is meeting her. I think they've gone to the murder scene, to the pool house.
Yeah.
And he asks her a question like, so is it true that he was here? And you can just hear in a very muffled, like weird voice, just her going, yes. Just completely different.
It's like they just didn't mic her at all for that shot. And we're like, okay.
All right, good enough.
Yeah.
I like that. And I like,
there's like the whole thing with like Columbo having like the filling drilled and the Novocaine in one mouth, and then like the entire scene after where he's talking with like half of his mouth like dulled out, and then they clearly had to ADR some lines in there and he had to do it again, and it's just like
so let's do the thing that we always do, that old standby, the plot synopsis.
How succinct can you make this?
Synopsis. Oh, wait, that's not our podcast. So this episode, Dr. Wesley Corman, we find out he's being chewed out by his boss, Horace Sherwin, played by Paul Burke.
Dr. Horace Sherwin.
Dr. Horace Sherwin, of course. All right. DDS, who is also a dentist, and they're both dentists in this practice.
Mm-hmm.
Wesley only got into this practice because he's married to the boss's daughter. But apparently he's a really shitty dentist.
Yeah, he's a really shitty dentist. I guess he's kind of a shitty husband. And then on top of that, he's a gambling addict.
And he has invested in restaurants that have failed. And he's basically wasting a bunch of the family's money.
My favorite is like the first thing that his father-in-law rattles off, which is like that he invested like... put some money, either bet on a horse or bought a racing horse.
Bought a horse,
That literally just like dropped dead in like the second race that it did after he bought it. And it's like, oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, like I think the deal was that Dr. Sherman, like, acquired his debt or collected it, or just like he sank his own money so bad that Sherman like bailed out Wesley, but basically Wesley owes him like 220 grand.
Yeah.
And so it was just the like, you're out on your ass. Also, your wife's leaving you.
Yeah.
See ya.
I've already given her the name of a good lawyer. So yeah. You've got, what is it? Did he say, he gives him like 6 weeks or something like that though. He says like, you need six. Yeah. I'll give you 6 weeks or 6 months. He gives him like a decent amount of time. It's not like you're going to be out on your ass tomorrow.
Right. But he says, it's not get out right now. It's just like, it's fucking over. You're out of here.
Yeah.
Because I know
out
you
what
can't.
What you're going to do.
Yeah. I know you're not good for the money, so get the fuck out.
It's good times for Wesley Corman. He is in trouble.
He is. I mean, you've seen his wardrobe.
I have. It's a problem. But he knows that his friend and patient, Adam Evans, who is a well-known action movie star, we learn a little bit of what his films are like from Columbo. And by the way, they sound great. I want to watch these films.
What was the one that
he comes out of a tank with a samurai sword?
Yes, that's the one. Thank you.
I'm like, hell yeah.
I know.
Where is that? Steven
Bochco.
I
heard that. I was like, I'd fucking watch that.
Steven Bochco, who wrote this episode, let's go. Let's do it. Come on, man.
I know, man. I know. Where is that fucking script?
Where's that script? You got the juice. Let's make it happen.
Seriously.
but
Hobbs and Shaw got made. Surely we can get a guy climbing out of a tank with a samurai sword.
That's all I've ever wanted. But Adam Evans, this movie star, has been sleeping with Lydia Corman, the wife of Dr. Wes.
Lydia's a big fan of him.
Right. He's also a patient of Dr. Wesley. And
a lot of conflicts of interest.
There's a whole lot going on. It's a real network of uncomfortable words. So anyway, he comes with a plan where Lydia has a heart condition. She's got a weak heart. We find out later because of a trauma when her
first husband died. Yeah.
Died of a heart attack while they were making love, which is unfortunately what happens again because Dr. Wesley takes her heart medication, Digitalis, grinds it up.
Fucking name.
I mean, that's what it is. That's
I know. What a name that is, though. Digitalis just really, really sounds like a 100% made up.
I know, but it is also 100% real.
I know, that's what makes it so ridiculous.
But so he grinds this stuff up. He adds it to temporary binding, which is basically what they use in like time pills. And he puts a little pill of it in the tooth.
Yeah.
In the tooth. Now, what's this tooth? I haven't mentioned a tooth previously. I'm setting this up incorrectly. Adam comes in to Wes to get a crown reseated. He has a crown. You see, Uneasy Lies, the crown.
The crown. We got
puns.
There. Yeah.
Puns.
Yeah, specifically Wesley calls and rearranges the appointment.
Right.
Then lies to his whole staff.
Yep.
So
lets
that they go on lunch.
Go for the day. Yeah. Or for a couple hours. Adam comes in. He gives him this little tiny time pill of death. and sends him on his way and then goes out to a poker game that we will talk about in a second. Adam Evans goes to his house, hooks up with Lydia. They have a couple margaritas.
Well, he has a couple margaritas.
She
can't because of her medication. Yep.
Yep. And then it finally releases the poison, and he dies.
Yep, he pretty much just immediately has a heart attack, to which her reaction is to scream at him over and over again, don't die while punching his corpse.
Hey, listen, we've all been there. And
do we need to have an intervention?
Listen, we don't talk about it on the podcast anyway. So, she hits 911 on the phone, but Dr. Wes cleverly has changed 911 to be the house of Victor Bovine. Is it Bovine or Bovine? I can't remember.
I want to say Bovine, but yeah, you know.
But at this guy's house where the poker game is happening.
Oh, what a game.
And what a game. We'll talk about it. We'll get there. So he calls up, or she calls up, says, there's been a heart attack. I need help. And then she says her name, and he recognizes it. He calls Wes over. He says, Wes, what's, you know, your wife's, she's screaming on the phone. And he goes over. And
your wife's hysterical. Slap her through this telephone. Like,
Lydia's brother David is also there at the poker game. And David and Wes head back to the house, find the corpse, and then David and Wes frame it to look like he had a heart attack. Kind of half-heartedly frame it. I mean, obviously, right. Wes is doing a poor job of it so as to implicate his wife.
Right. I mean, and they do it on Mulholland Drive, which is like, I would guess, a running joke for L.A. I mean, there may as well be a sign that says, dump corpses here, you know. But
they push his car off a cliff. But not before Wes has left one of their monogrammed cigarette or lighter book. Matchbooks. Right. Jesus.
Yeah, he leaves a klutzy trail to suggest that that he was at.
And he also plants a little
Wes
bit.
And Lydia's house.
He plants actually quite a bit of digitalis.
Way too much in
the margarita. Yes, yeah. To implicate her.
Yeah, in the margarita and in the blender that the margarita was made in. Like so much that it is just an excessive. Like it would have just dropped him on the spot. Is basically what the
Emmy says. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, that is the murder. And the cover up.
Right.
Ta-da.
And so that's kind of like the core of it then. Cause like once you start to like, cause they don't actually tell us everything that happened, but this is around the point where we start to get the idea of the details of like what happened with, Lydia's, you know, first husband and him, you know, basically dying in the same way. And that's the point where you're like, wow, Wes, you're a fucking monster.
Yeah. He sucks. He's also, it's worth noting he is doing this frame job, which he knows will be broken. He's doing it to ingratiate himself on Horace Sherwin, DDS.
Yeah, well, with Lydia's dad and her brother, and also getting her brother involved in the cover-up process under the guise of, like, no, we have to do this to help her, which is this whole false presentation of how much he cares about her, rather than like, oh, I'll do all this, and then he won't give a shit, and I can just, you know, keep on keeping on.
Yep. He's bad. He's a bad guy.
Yeah, he's also real clumsy at it.
Yeah, he's not great. It turns out that he was apparently not paying that close attention in his classes about medications and that sort of thing. He hasn't really been keeping up with the thing, and that's
he's a shitty chemist is the short version.
that ultimately proves his downfall, but we'll get there. It's interesting. Like, it's an interesting premise. I think that probably the hammy acting sort of blunts a lot of it.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, right? There's a mixture of like the kind of ham-fisted acting, because it's not always like, it's just that like there are times when it kind of peaks out and you're like, what the fuck's happening right now? And then there are other times when it's just like, it's going fine. And he just comes across as like a smarmy kind of, you know, hot garbage kind of human being, and that works. That's the role. He's doing it right. But there's other shit, like the way that like that first poker game is shot, and I hesitate to say scripted, but I guess I have to say it's scripted
because
it's just it's so stilted and unfunny, and it's desperately
it's
trying
bad.
To be funny.
So we need to talk about who's at this poker game. So this is a poker game that is attended by some of the most cheaply available but recognizable talents in Hollywood. We've got
I believe it's called Who Wants to Get a Paycheck?
Who wants a little bit of money for a day and a half of work?
Right.
We've got Nancy Walker, who appeared on McMillan and Wife. So, interesting note about this. Apparently, this story was originally pitched for Columbo back when the original run, but apparently Peter Falk thought it was too boring, and so they ran it on McMillan and Wife. So they've already used this idea, like Stephen Bochco used this idea on McMillan and Wife, and then stole from himself
to redo it for Columbo. Yeah. Down the road. Wow. Yeah. Fuck off.
Yeah, pretty bad.
That's pretty lazy.
It's pretty lazy. I mean, hey, listen, you don't get to be a Stephen Bochco without cutting a few corners.
I mean, hey, he got paid, so
I'm Stephen Bochco, and
him.
I talk like this.
That's a good Stephen Bochco impression.
Dick Sargent, of course, which people may remember as the second Darren on Bewitched, after Dick York. We've also got Ron Say, who was a third baseman for the L.A. Dodgers and was a big deal back then.
Yeah.
And then we've also got John Rourke, who is the funny guy.
You mean the guy who just does impressions instead of having a personality?
The entire time.
Yeah.
He among other things, he played the president. He played various presidents in various things. Played Reagan. He's played Bush. He was Ed McMahon in the Here's Johnny. Remember the Here's Johnny parody?
I don't remember that.
The Here's Johnny Weird Al. I literally don't. It's like a F side. I got it.
I got it now. I know now though. And yeah, okay. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is it's like as the conceit of this is the guy at the table who does impressions is right. Like, yeah, all right. There's always one guy like that, but also.
And then also, of course, the host, Victor Bavane, who, as far as I can tell, he's just a working actor, but he's playing him. Like, all of the people in this are playing themselves, including right. John Rourke, who is the funny guy, and Victor Bavane, they're just playing themselves, who they're just working actors. They're just playing themselves as, like, a couple of guys who are probably friends of Stephen Bochco. Like, now, when we get down to it, I bet these are guys who play in Bochco's poker game.
They must be, because it's a terrible scene, because it's just awkward and stilted and bad. And then it's intercut with the murder and like right. the seriousness and kind of trauma of that scene. And they like cut back and forth between her like beating on his chest and like screaming and crying and freaking out. And
incredibly
this poker
terrible,
game,
sticky, you right. know, very, very hammy, very scripted.
Right. And it's super meant to be this like juxtaposition of like, this guy is, you know, just having a good time while he
yucking
is absolutely torturing his wife, like, you know. Yeah. and it's like, it's still visible, it's still there, but it's so klutzy, I guess is what I want to say
clumsy.
About it. Like, the
it's
idea is good
episode.
It's just poorly executed, and
for sure.
Yeah, anyway, so right, so there's the call and all the other stuff with the murder, but yeah, that it's just so bad. And the impressions, it's not that he can't do a good impression. It's just every time they come out, stop it. Like, I get it. You're doing this to fill air because someone said, well, just do a thing with an impression and we'll just use whichever ones we think are funny. Because, like, none of it has to track, you know? It's literally just like cut shots of people calling or folding or whatever. It is, though. Like, when you think about it, it's like, oh, no.
But I mean, later they go back. Like, the wonderful thing is that they do go back to this poker game. Later, Columbo shows up and has a very fun scene where he recognizes
Right.
Nancy Walker and Dick Sargent, and mm-hmm. spends way too much time not remembering who they are.
Right. And even more time awkwardly not asking him the critical things he needs to ask them about a murder investigation.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets to it, but no, I actually enjoyed that scene a lot. Because it is substantially better, and it's very clear because they have a script and they have something to play off instead of, well, you're just killing time playing poker while we're waiting for this phone to call to ring, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it still sucks, and I don't want it to happen, but it is better than the earlier poker scene.
Right, it's an improvement, is what I'm saying. Like, as far as, listen, if you're already trapped in the hell that is watching this episode, then getting to that feels like a relief after the first poker episode.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's,
But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that weird, like, little comic relief, which I know we've already kind of trodden on with Columbo, and... You know,
there's one bit that was legitimately like made me laugh out loud, and I actually rewound it so that I could show my fiance because I loved it so much.
All right,
it's the bit where he's okay. So you be Wesley Corman and I'll be scene. I'll be Columbo. It's okay. It'll be okay. It'll be okay. So, you know, it's funny, sir. My cousin. Extremely fit guy in his 30s. He would exercise all the time. Then one day, walking down the street, bang, dead. And then you say, oh, heart attack? Come on, man, play along.
Heart attack?
Nope, hit by a car. It's like hit by a bread truck.
Yep.
And it's just so weird.
No,
and
you're right. Like, fuck.
And Wesley Wesley actually laughs at Columbo.
That feels kind of genuine.
What is wrong with you? Yeah. It's such a weird moment.
It's
but
great,
it's so
though,
weirdly
honestly,
Columbo.
It's
yeah.
just, it's this like total left turn because he's so nonchalant and the like, oh yeah, no, I totally understand. You know, like
guy just died in your house. Here, let me share you a very weird out of place anecdote about my cousin.
I know, just that fucking turn, like it's so ridiculous, but it's also like it works because it's kind of a throwaway and it's not, they don't draw a lot of attention to it. It's not a tuba scene.
Yeah, and there's the same that the early scene where he's trying to figure out how to mount the magnetic light on top of his cloth top roof.
And then the
can't
fucking
figure out how to do it.
The fucking telephone game that the two guys in the cars behind him start playing, you know, where
it's a goofy gag, but it's all right. You know, it like the opening of this episode is okay. Like coming into it, it's a little hammy in the start, but I'm like, you know, this could be okay. And then it just kind of,
it doesn't quite get there. Like, there's a lot of things that are like clear, nice signifiers. Like, because the you know, we see Sherman's, Dr. Sherman's office before we see Wesley's office. So when we see Wesley's Wesley's office is like so stark comparatively. Like, it is super just overdone in the style and quote-unquote taste of the era, you know, to be like, oh, this guy's spending money on these like fancy artifacts that he's had imported from Southeast Asia or Africa and, you know, it's like, it's that kind of shit. And like his house is the same way, where it's got those kind of like stark, like
it's very pseudo-modernist
90s. Lines. Yeah. But extremely 90s when you see like the decoration, because it's either like, oh, it's a tapestry from Japan, or it's like, oh, it's from India, or, you know, just all of this stuff that screams that kind of.
Yeah, at one point in the pool house, you can see a Bowflex, which instantly places this as being the 1990s. That's just like, oh, the 90s, boom. Like
I caught that too when they came back to the boathouse. I was like, oh, a Bowflex, hey! Yeah. And then I was like, oh, why did that need to be? Okay, whatever. I don't know.
It's just somebody's pool house they're filming in. It's not a set. It's just a pool house. It's a little goofy.
Super goofy. I mean, there's some, oh man.
There's some all right. You know, I would say this one doesn't have a lot of like fat to it. Like that isn't the problem. The problem isn't like these long flights of fancy into nowhere. Like Columbo kind of is on the case all the time. Either he's, you know, on Wesley's thing, or he's breaking this, you know, Lydia Corman frame.
He's like constantly chipping away at it steadily. Yeah. It doesn't feel slow. I do have to give it credit on that front. Like, there isn't really a lot of air, even though there are some just bad scenes.
Right.
You know, and like, but there is this element of like, there are a lot of scenes where it feels like we really want somebody else to be on the screen with Columbo so that they can ask him dumb questions. Yeah. So can we get that for like everything? Okay, cool.
Yeah. There's a little bit of that. There's there's a scene where he goes and talks to George, the ME, who's Stephen Gilborn, an instantly recognizable character actor.
Oh, yeah.
We also have the scene where he goes to his dentist, who looks for all the world like, what's the guy? The guy who did the sitcom where he was wearing a ski mask the entire time, John Glazer. He looks exactly like John Glazer.
Yeah.
Like if you were making this now, it would be John Glazer, like 100%.
Yeah, and that scene's definitely got some weird vibes to
it. It's so weird. His dentist hates him so much. Yeah. Like, it's another...
His dentist
is just
angry at him, and like, yeah.
Yeah, the entire time. It's another one of the good old classic, a random person hates Columbo for apparently no reason.
Right. Well, it's like, just then, like, the thing that blows my mind is, like, there's all of that just, like, hate and disgust and whatever. And then there's, like, the weird, like explosion where he does, like, the joke. And that feels even more hateful when he tells a joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just absolutely. Like, what is happening? Why would you let this man put... like any kind of sharp things in your mouth with an attitude like that. Jesus.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a
couple of interesting scenes with character actors who got paid.
Yep. Who got paid and were allowed to just run wild, and kudos to them for doing that and still getting a paycheck. But yeah, I mean, and that leads into that scene that I talked about earlier where, you know, where Columbo basically is Novocained out on one side of his mouth, and that, you know, and it's like, again, it's all well integrated because it's like, it's the thing that gives him the impetus to think about why was there a cut on the inside of the cheek? Why is that the only fresh, you know, cut on this guy, you know, when like every other cut on him is from like doing his own damn stunts. And then he puts it together like, oh, if that side was numb, then he bit his cheek and that's the side that didn't have any fillings or anything, which and sounds also, like he and it's because it that is what happened. Wesley literally just pulled a fucking tooth out and then
pulled a crown off, but yes. And then also the thing happens a lot in sort of middling detective episodes of television where someone says something unrelated that they really like, that's very uncommon for them to say, but it's like the secret to the entire episode, which is this conversation with John Finnegan, where he like brings up these pills that he bought. And
right.
He's like, oh, it looks like candy. They got all these colors. And then DDS, Horace Sherwin DDS says, oh no, all those colors mean different things. They dissolve at different times. Yeah. And then Columbo's like, I've got it. I got how he did it. Yep.
Yeah. He's like, oh, like, I understand everything now. Yeah, it's his big brain moment.
Thank goodness somebody was discussing the exact thing that people, like that was a very common, tiny time pills were the constant conversation.
I know, just all the rage in the early 90s, you know. You just couldn't turn on the television without seeing an ad for tiny, tiny time release capsules that go with your drugs so that they stay in your system all day long. Ah, ask your doctor today.
You just walk down the street and you'd be like, all right, I get it. Shut up. Yeah. I know the red ones dissolve in 2 hours. I know the yellow ones dissolve in 4 hours. It's like, leave me alone with this. I'm tired of hearing about it.
Yeah. But so again, it's like they fit all that stuff in and happily didn't spend a lot of time kind of languishing with completely unnecessary scenes.
Yeah. I mean, it all moves. It doesn't always move like a human being, you know, like a,
right.
like a natural creature. It sort of shambles
yeah.
a little bit.
Yeah. It's a little bit of a homunculus. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we've certainly watched worse episodes.
Oh, yeah.
I say it's a firmly middling episode.
Here's the thing. I will say it is entertaining, but it's not good.
No.
And I mean, some of that entertainment, in fairness, is when Columbo goes to a fucking nightclub to meet Wesley and his brother-in-law to question his brother-in-law about their shitty story that is obviously fake about, you know, basically their whole cover up about driving the fucking car off the cliff and all that bullshit. But oh man, that scene is a treasure trove of some of the worst fucking fashion imaginable. Yeah. Seriously. Like I just made a note of like, if you want to see some real awful shit, just watch this. Just watch this scene and look at everybody in the background all the time.
If you want to talk about entertaining but not particularly good, Stephen Bochco, ladies and gentlemen.
We got there. All right. Well, we're done here. We did it.
definitely
monstrous of me.
I mean, definitely one of the most watchable creators of some of the most watchable television that, you know, it's hard to justify to people why you're watching it.
Right. Like, but it exists
watching,
and it's on television
NYPD
right now.
You're watching NYPD Blue and you're like, I mean, it's pretty good. Yeah. Like, you know, it's pretty good.
It's on.
I mean, it's good. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about our Wes and his wonderful outfits?
Christ almighty. I mean, the thing that's nice is like the moment you see him, it establishes, oh, we're in the early 90s. We did it. We got there. So he's got this suit that, like, on closer inspection, I think, in the latter part of the episode, you can see that there's, like, kind of a pinstripe-ish running through it. I mean, it's not as frequent, and it's subtle. But it's, like, a almost, it's not quite bottle green, but it's definitely, like, a kind of darkish green double-breasted suit, and it is staunchly 90s, like in that kind of Armani influence. So like if when you look at the jacket, like the shoulders look big, the cut of it feels kind of big, but the lapels on the, like the peak lapels on the double-breasted jacket are kind of small actually. Mm-hmm. And then it's a 6x1, which also doesn't have any rear vents. So 6x1, it's got 6 buttons on the front, and you only button one of them on the front.
What? Madness.
They're a very challenging jacket to get to work. We've talked about this before because I've seen, you know, similar ones on like Patrick McGoohan, and it works on his frame because he's a very tall, kind of thin fellow. Yeah. But like, they mostly don't work on people's bodies, keep trying.
I feel like no matter what Patrick McGoohan tries, you're going to support him in that. I feel like, you know, you're on Team Magoo. You're on Team Magoo's. Let's be honest.
I generally am, but I would. Yeah. I would get, you know, nastier if the stuff didn't fit him properly, and that's kind of I don't like the Armani fit in this kind of era. Anyway, but so there's crap like that, and then like is it Herman? Sorry, I keep blanking because this is a Horace, God. It's Horst, his father-in-law.
Yes,
like,
Horace Sherwin, DDS, please.
Thank
he
you.
Went to
Horace
went
Sherwin,
to dental school.
DDS. Dr. Horace. Sure. Anyway, but DDS. Yeah, so like in that first scene, like he's, you know, just wearing kind of like the work coat, you know, but when he takes it off, you get this beautiful, like immediately you're like, oh, those trousers have all the pleats, and also he's not wearing them high enough to justify having all those pleats. What's going on? And then he actually puts on kind of a cool jacket. Like, that jacket I legit like. It's this weird kind of like little multi-stripe thing that you can see in the close-up shots, and he wears it later, like when he's poking at dentistry garbage with Columbo, and weirdly wearing like a some kind of like Scotch plaid flannel shirt under it. I don't get it.
They're hanging at the chili hut.
Yeah. Well, Columbo's mouth doesn't work.
Arguably, no, it never does, but
fair. So Wes definitely has some hot garbage in his wardrobe. There's a time that he answers the door and he's wearing a sweater. If you see it, it's a crime. I mean, you'll know it. And
this
actually
is when he meets Columbo for the first time.
Yeah, like he just opens up the door at home and is just casually wearing this hot garbage sweater. And then he's wearing a different hot garbage, like Cosby-esque sweater under the blazer, like the kind of like not medium tan, but like light tobacco blazer that he's wearing at the nightclub. And it's just, oof.
That nightclub. Speaking of the 1990s, that nightclub.
I know, man. In the background, I swear that like there's a dude wearing like not a t-shirt, but something along those lines, and then like a leather vest over it that's just open, and like it's
good times.
No, all of that stuff. Like I see it, and I just like I see my high school self and immediately feel hot shame, you know. It's really, it's such a beautiful train wreck in the background. I highly encourage
fantastic
anybody to,
times.
Yeah. But yeah, those were the
main ones. What a
decade,
the 90s, huh? What a decade.
Yeah, it's not going to get any better. I don't think there's going to be a point where it improves in the remainder of Columbo.
No.
Given
last,
the timeline we
our
have.
Our last episode is going to be in 2003, and folks.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, listen, there's a lot of people wearing dumb clothes out now. And
sure.
Of course, you always think in the time you are in that you have it figured out. But
listen, none of us have it figured out. Here's the secret. Yeah. Find something that you enjoy and, you know, and wear it, I guess. Yeah. That's really the short version. I mean,
yeah. And if you're on television and they make you wear a dumb suit, then that it just happens. Listen. You can only control so much. Not everybody can be Patty Magoo's and bring in their, you know, their
listen,
tailored.
Listen, these days, they a lot of money exchanges hands for them to feature, you know, a specific designer or whatever. And if those designer suits don't fit you well, fuck you. No, I mean, that's what costuming is for. They're gonna do you right if you're, at
if
this point. Right.
And if they care.
Right. And if they do you wrong, well, then you should ask yourself what you did to piss off the costumers, because you probably pissed them off.
It's for your fault and you're a bad person.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's what I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, I don't know. I wrote sweater crimes in all caps.
I don't know that that's, I mean, I feel like that's good to say, but I don't feel
accurate.
Like it's necessarily a rich.
Oh, no, the thing, I think the thing that I wrote down that I was kind of admiring was there's some point when they are, I think it's when Wes takes his brother-in-law back and, you know, they're headed back to the house or whatever. And they're looking around, I don't know, they're outside, and just the brother just like just yells out of nowhere, pool house.
Pool house.
Yeah. And I mean, that is obviously where she is, and they go, you know, find the corpse and proceed to clean up, but it is just, it's such a weird moment.
He momentarily thought that he was in a production of The Music Man.
Right. I mean,
pool
it's just,
house.
Yeah. He just yells it. And like, no, like, oh, she's probably in the, like, nope, just pool house. And off they go. And it's real dumb. And I kind of love it. That's the only other thing I got. Yeah.
It's real dumb. And I kind of love it. Columbo.
Hey.
Frankly, the Columbo is as well. That's going to do it for this week. we have fun here.
We're a little loopy.
Listen, I've been stuck inside for over a week at this point, basically. I went out and did a little shopping earlier, and that was the first time I had left the house in 7 days. So,
yeah,
you know,
hasn't quite been as long for me, but I feel you, man.
Plus I've been working from home, and that's not great. No. Working from home is not, it's the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, as it turns out, really hard to keep separate from your personal life. Hard to just relax. Yeah.
It's worse than working in the office. You think it'd be better, but it's really not.
Nope.
It really isn't. Anyway.
I mean, yeah.
People, listen. If you're out there listening to this, you know what's going on. You know the deal.
Stay safe. Wash your hands.
Stay safe.
Don't touch your face.
Don't touch other people's faces.
Yep.
Don't lick anything.
Yeah.
No, like popsicles, nothing. That's going to do it for this week. This has been Columb Boys. I'm Mac.
I'm Ben.
And just one more thing.
Yes?
Wash your fucking hands.
Seriously.
Wash your goddamn hands.
Wash your fucking hands.
Wash your hands. Stay indoors. Stay indoors and wash your hands.
Don't go to
what
big fucking gatherings. Stay indoors.
Stay in there. Don't. Oh, my God.
Wash your hands. Remain indoors.
Remain indoors and wash your fucking hands.
Seriously. Also, if you have to order anything from a delivery person, you better tip them well.
Tip them well. Wash your fucking hands.
Wash your hands.
Anyway, bye.
Bye.
Columb Boys is hosted by Mac Johnson and Ben Swallow. You can follow them on Twitter at MacJ and at DandyGeek. The Columb Boys theme is by Seth Boyer. Thanks for listening.